But what could he do now? 3 hours sitting in the back seat of a Toyota Corolla aside Fat Monty, who wasn't even fat anymore since he'd done 6 months and got hooked up with some steroids and had apparently hit the weights pretty hard. And all Sal had come to conclude was that he was probably only a few hours at most from his own death. Not that Sal was actually afraid, at least not yet. Fat Monty hadn't taken his cell phone from him, which was a good sign, but it kept vibrating in his pocket, which to Sal meant his wife Jennifer was wondering where he was. She knew he wasn't exactly a 9-to-5 guy, knew that when he was off doing family business that he could be gone until the next day, or might need a jet down to Florida or over to Detroit. But even in those cases, he was pretty good about giving her a heads up that he wouldn't be back for dinner. The bosses understood that he couldn't just disappear for weeks on end without a word, now that he had a kid. Because once the wives got talking, it was everybody's problem. And on this day, of all days, he told Jennifer he'd pick up a prescription for her over at the 24-hour Walgreens. His son William was in preschool over at Mount Carmel Academy and brought home a dozen infectious diseases a week. Or at least, that's what it felt like. All three of them constantly battling some kind of respiratory shit that winter. The codeine cough medicine was helping, and Sal promised to pick up a refill on his way home. And that all would have happened if he hadn't lost it on those Donnie Brascos. And now here he was, maybe 200 miles outside of Chicago, in the middle of the night, nothing but black farmland on either side of the highway. Fat Monty breathing through his mouth next to him. Two young guys up front, a half-Latino kid called Chima riding shotgun, and Fat Monty's cousin Neil driving, though he spent more time looking in the rearview mirror than at the road, which wasn't helping Sal's sense of dread. He wasn't afraid to die, but he was afraid of how it would feel to leave Jennifer and William behind. It wasn't something he'd thought about before. But today had been full of revelations. Dying was fine, he could handle that. He was only 35, but he'd had enough close calls in the past that he wasn't mystical about the process. He knew there'd come a time when he was on the other end of a gun, and that would be that. But he didn't want Jennifer and William to suffer for his stupidity. This whole deal was different. Preventable. That's what kept niggling at him. Somehow all this was gonna roll back on them. He fished his buzzing phone out of his pocket. If he was going to die tonight, at least he'd see his wife's name one last time. "The fuck you doing?" Fat Monty said, though he didn't snatch the phone from Sal's hand. "Interesting." "It's been going off all night," Sal said. He didn't answer to Fat Monty, and he wasn't about to start, so he kept himself calm, went the honest route. "My wife's sick." "Man, cops can triangulate that shit. You gotta lose that thing." "You think they're looking for me?" "Oh, you think your fingerprints aren't on record? Your first mistake, and it was a doozy. A little restraint, Sal, and you'd be home right now." "Yeah," Sal said. "Well, things got clumsy, I admit that." "You don't have to admit shit," Fat Monty said. "Everyone already knows it's true." "Everyone." Sal hated to think about what that meant. Monty still hadn't asked for the phone, so Sal just turned it off and stuffed it back into his pocket. One thing for certain, if it were Monty who'd fucked up, Sal would have already killed him. That much he knew. And he wouldn't have bothered with any witnesses either, especially not the half-Latino kid, whose neck Sal could see was covered in sweat. The bosses were all about diversifying lately, not keeping to the strict Italian edict, particularly not with so many good soldiers doing time. Supply and demand and a lack of good staff turned everything upside down. That's what got him in trouble in the first place. Three new guys started hanging around the fringes of the family, trying to get inside any way they could, coming up with stashes of top-of-the-line televisions, heroin, even a truck full of leather office furniture, to the point that the bosses couldn't ignore them. The TVs and office furniture were one thing, but when they produced bags and bags of the highest grade heroin, Sal was no good on heroin. It made him twitchy and overly aggressive, but he'd been convinced to give it a taste and had something like a religious sexual experience that night. The bosses began to wonder where they were connecting from, since the family had controlled the heroin in Chicago for the better part of a century. So they told Sal to dig around, learn what he could, and report back when he knew anything definitive. This truth